Dr. Hoffman here. This Intelligent Medicine podcast is brought to you by Super Beats. I personally take Super Beats when I need a power boost. It's my favorite product. Super Beats gives me energy and stamina for my busy day. Right now, get a one-month supply free with your first order. Check out the Dr. Hoffman special right now at IntelligentBeats.com. That's IntelligentBeats.com. Welcome back to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and it's Q&A with Layla. It's an opportunity for you to pose your questions. You can send them to us via email, radioprogram@AOL.com. Our website, of course, is drhoffman.com, but our email is radioprogram@AOL.com for questions. And what do we got in the mailbag?
Okay. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, is it necessary for my 2-year-old granddaughter to receive a flu shot? The amount of shots kids get these days is of concern to me. I mean, how much can their tiny bodies handle at one time? I know for a fact that she had received 2 immunizations in each leg at one time. I had to leave the room. So I ask you, do you think she should get a flu shot? She does go to daycare 4 days a week. She's 2. Wow.
Well, you know, this is a whole essay question. And, here's the problem. You know, we have dramatically increased the number of vaccines that we give to kids. Yeah. And each individual vaccine has a potent rationale. We want to give vaccines that prevent meningitis. Now we want to give young girls vaccines to prevent human papillomavirus. We want to prevent the flu. We want to prevent measles, mumps, rubella, polio, hepatitis. You know, all these things, it's all for the good. The question is whether or not this onslaught of artificially prepared antigenic material can potentially have deleterious effects on a child's immune system, overstimulate it. There are accounts of the development of autism in relationship to these. Studies, however, suggest no, that's not what's happening. And it just goes back and forth. And it's a problem that individual parents have to confront. And, you know, one of the issues, too, is perhaps we want to delay the use of the vaccines, not do them when the child's immune system is very young or naive. Maybe wait a little longer, or maybe give the vaccines individually rather than give what are called trivalent or quadrivalent vaccines, like 4 things at a time. In our rush to protect our kids, we're not doing enough studies to see if there may be a potential downside. Maybe not for all kids, but maybe for certain susceptible kids, kids who have vulnerable immune systems. It's not one size fits all. The vast majority of kids do fine. Or do they? Who knows? Because we see the advent of a lot of autoimmune diseases later in life. We see poor immunity. We see, you know, kids very vulnerable to allergic problems, asthma, and so on, so on, so on. So, you know, there's a lot of potential implications of our vaccination policy. And I cannot give you an answer. And I have to say that I used to write notes for parents so that their kids didn't have to get vaccines. Well, that was very, very problematic because, number one, I'm not a pediatrician. And number two, there's a firestorm of pressure that's exerted on parents and on doctors to lockstep with the conventional recommendations. And very few doctors have the gumption and, frankly, the energy to fight the authorities on this. And God forbid, if a child does get sick, they inherit a lot of liability. So it's a very sticky situation.
I've heard of pediatricians dismissing patients because the parents refuse to immunize. It's a sad state of affairs. I know.
So
what's the right answer here?
I will give you the name of a doctor who actually writes about this, and he does see patients. His name is Dr. Larry Rosen, R-O-S-E-N. And, of course, he has a huge waiting list because there are very few complementary pediatricians around. He's staunchly anti-vaccine. But that puts him way out of the mainstream of most doctors.
Something for this person to consider. Okay. Mm-hmm. Best of luck with your granddaughter. All right.
Yep.
We have another question. This comes from Whitey. He says,
like Whitey Bulger, like the guy who was just convicted of the Boston murders, the mobster?
Possibly. Whitey.
Whitey?
That'd be a nickname. Yeah, Whitey.
Okay.
That's how he signs.
I don't know. Maybe he's from, he's a Southie from Boston.
Could be.
okay.
I have essential tremors. I'm 64 years old.
Okay.
I've had this condition for about 20 to 25 years. Is there any possible treatment for it other than medication? Mine shows up exclusively in my hands. Mm-hmm. My mother had this condition, and a few of my brothers have it.
Mm-hmm.
One of my brothers uses medication with success. However, he has recently had to increase the dose because he's developing resistance to the medication.
Yeah.
Thank you for your response.
Well, it's a tough condition. There is a great natural treatment for it, and it's a very ancient treatment. It's called booze. that's actually one of the ways you can diagnose this, because as opposed to Parkinson's disease, which uh-huh. really doesn't get better, the tremor of Parkinson's disease does not get better with alcohol.
Yeah.
The tremor of essential tremors, which is inherited, it's thought to be, this person mentions, it's a familial trait. This does somewhat abate with alcohol. Of course, then you get all the downsides of the alcohol consumption.
Right.
And, alcohol impairs you. But I don't think it's a coincidence that the gunslingers, like all those old Western movies, they would always hang around in the saloon waiting for the gunfight, like in the movie High Noon.
Well, that's when the fight was happening. It was always a brawl.
No. There's a classic movie called High Noon where they actually go to the bar, they take a few whiskey shots, and it's to steady their hand because, bottom line, everyone has a tremor. If you have a very...
Or it's either that or it's to grow some cojones.
That's true. I mean, hey, listen.
It's a gunfight.
If you're going to shoot it out at 50 feet away from your adversary, guns blasting, I would have a drink too.
Absolutely.
But so alcohol is a way to slow. The medication this person is taking is what's called a beta blocker, and beta blockers definitely help this. However, they wear off in their efficacy, and this situation does tend to get worse. I notice that patients get worse when they become hypoglycemic. Stabilizing blood sugar is helpful, and certainly caffeine can make it worse.
Okay. All right. I guess getting cortisol checked would also be helpful if there's a lot of stress
perhaps.
Hormones.
I have to admit, I don't think there's a magic complementary medicine treatment for it. Perhaps magnesium to some extent, but I don't even think it's that helpful. This is genetic.
Okay. All right. Best of luck to Whitey.
Yep.
All right. We have, this comes from Roger.
Mm-hmm.
I was recently diagnosed with facial scapular muscular dystrophy.
Wow.
What options are there to make it easy on
him? Could we get an easy question, please?
Sure. I recently was diagnosed with facial scapular muscular dystrophy.
I mean, you're just repeating the same question. It doesn't make it any easier.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm just being facetious.
That's what I thought you said. Sorry,
right,
Dr. Hoffman.
Right.
It's gotten more difficult in the past 6 months. He's 65.
Yeah.
Wow. Well,
okay, muscular dystrophy is one of those neurological conditions for which I'm not sure there is a natural approach. I think it's worth considering things like coenzyme Q10, magnesium, and overall, helping a patient because, with the right kind of nutrition. Yeah. But I just don't think there's a specific nutritional correlate for muscular dystrophy. Again, it's a genetic condition. Often genetic conditions are the hardest conditions to treat with medicines or with nutrition because, they're not about poor diet. It's not like you get muscular dystrophy because you ate, crappy food. And so it's a tough condition to treat. While you ask the next question, I'm going to go through my data banks and see if I have anything on muscular dystrophy, but I'm not sure.
The next one is from Karen. Mm-hmm. The seemingly opposing conditions in which a diagnosis of Graves' disease is made in a 67-year-old woman who has been fighting a weight battle all of her entire life. So, Karen needs to lose 50 pounds, but it's been a struggle to even lose 15.
Wait, she has Graves' disease?
Graves' disease.
Well, the reason she can't lose weight is probably because of the medications used to control the Graves' disease may have slowed her thyroid down.
Right, right, right. So that would need to be checked.
And she may not be on she may need thyroid replacement to get her thyroid growing again, yeah.
And she's following a paleo-centered diet, but it's a difficult choice if one is on a limited budget. Well, first of all, you could still do paleo the right way on a limited budget.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's what's organic and so forth. You don't necessarily have to go that route. It's much more important that you eat in a paleo style.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you do have to, you know, go for the regular conventional chicken or meat rather than the organic, which is way more expensive, you just do the best that you can.
Mm-hmm.
Much more important that you're able to follow an eating plan. But yeah, Dr. Hoffman, that's it. The thyroid replacement needs to be reevaluated, yes?
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Generally, patients with hypothyroidism, they gain weight, and patients with hyperthyroidism, that's Graves' disease, their thyroid is accelerated, so their metabolism speeds up and they lose weight. But, you know, once you have a thyroid condition, it's best to eat a lower carb, higher protein diet with fat as your main source of calories as opposed to carbohydrates. So I'm looking at muscular dystrophy, and I'm not going to recant of my initial impression that there is no holistic magic bullet, but I do see reference to what I did say earlier, coenzyme Q10 or ubiquinol. Creatine may also be helpful. Creatine is used for athletic competition to strengthen the muscles. So I don't know, though. I don't know that that's going to be the magic bullet. Other people suggest higher doses of vitamin E, but I just, you know, I'm thinking
tough
that,
one.
Yeah, it's a reach. Other things, glutamine has been shown to be helpful in some studies. Creatine, I see again. Curcumin, because it's anti-inflammatory. Selenium may play a role because it helps with glutathione. Perhaps intravenous glutathione would be helpful for somebody with muscular dystrophy. We don't get a lot of patients with muscular dystrophy. It's not that common a condition, and they just may not be aware that there's a complementary perspective on that. But, you know, it's always worth – these are conditions where it may be worth a try at some sort of nutritional support program, because it's a condition that the best hope for this condition is they develop genetic fixes to gene splice and fix the genetic defect that causes the condition. And that's in the future, and perhaps stem cells may play a role in regeneration of muscles and nerves. But some adjunctive nutritional or holistic care might, I underline, might be helpful in that condition. MD, muscular dystrophy.
Yeah. Oh, best of luck. Okay. This next question comes from Lee. I just listened to a discussion about the perils of overuse of antibiotics.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Does the same concept apply to xylitol products?
No,
not an antibiotic.
No, xylitol is somewhat reduces bacterial overgrowth.
Yeah,
but it certainly
breaks up the biofilms. Yeah,
yeah, it doesn't. I don't think it's so potent that it's going to kill all your beneficial bacteria. No.
Okay.
In short, no. You know, and look, why they ask that is because Clear XLEAR is a product, is a nasal spray product, also sometimes used in neti or a nasal wash, to break up biofilms that are in the nasal passages and in the throat. And this can be a way that you can break the vicious cycle of chronic sinus infections that sometimes lead to asthma attacks and pneumonia.
And the overuse of antibiotics.
And, of course, the overuse of antibiotics. And sometimes there's also fungus in the nasal passages hiding in the biofilms. And the xylitol in Clear, which is, by the way, spelled X-L-E-A-R, the X denotes xylitol, this is a product that we find very helpful. So, actually, we did an entire podcast with Dr. Stephen Olmsted on the subject of biofilms, and I hope you listen to it. I'm not sure when we're posting it, but probably we actually did post it. It is currently posted on our website. So go to drhoffman.com, click on the listen button, scroll down to our podcast page, and you'll see an entire podcast with a very, very detailed discussion of what biofilms are and additional products in addition to xylitol, which can attack biofilms. It's a very, very interesting discussion.
Wonderful. Wonderful.
So okay, we have time for one more, yeah.
Mm-hmm. One more. Okay, this comes from Fran. Fran is very interested about vitamin C intravenously for her father, who is 86, with metastatic prostate cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Would you recommend it?
Yes. In short, yes.
Yeah, yeah. And he has a PSA of 1,100.
Oh, listen, you know, we have a current patient who has metastatic prostate cancer, and he's had it for years. And his condition is stable. He's actually one of our most faithful patients. He comes on a regular basis for intravenous vitamin C.
Yes.
You know, I think had he not done that, he could be in very, very serious condition. And he's currently not in any other medical therapy. He's simply on nutritional therapy and using intravenous vitamin C.
Mm-hmm. And Fran's father had been. Well, he had his testicles removed approximately 3 years ago.
Orchiectomy, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and was on Casodex.
Right. That's a testosterone-blocking thing. Yeah.
Yeah, and now on a steroid and Zytiga.
Right. Zytiga is a new drug. And, you know, look, this is a very advanced form of prostate cancer. These therapies are not usually curative, but they fight a valiant holding action against end-stage prostate cancer. But, yeah, I think nutritional support can make a difference at any stage of prostate cancer. I mean, it helps to prevent prostate cancer. It helps to prevent it from coming back after your initial prostate surgery. We also do active holistic surveillance on some patients where we're working with their urologists to make sure their cancer isn't growing or spreading, but they have cancer, and it's actually now acceptable to do what's called watchful waiting, or we prefer the term active holistic surveillance. I'm actually appearing this weekend on a program on Sunday morning with Dr. Aaron Katz, who's head of urology at Winthrop Hospital. He has a program called Katz's Corner, which is, as strange as it may seem, it's a show about urology. Now, you would think
it's not Katz's Corner Deli,
right? Exactly, exactly. But it is such an informative program. So I really feel quite honored that he wanted to get my complimentary medicine input on urological problems, and we're going to discuss that this Sunday at 7 a.m. So those of you who are early risers on Sunday, tune into WABC. In New York City at 7 a.m. Or you can get the podcast. The show is called Katz's Corner.
Great.
Maybe we'll link to that podcast so that people can listen, because his shows are always very interesting. He's unusual in that he's a urologist, and he's a master of all the best high-tech conventional treatments, but he's very open to diet and nutritional support. So he's a truly an integrative urologist, and I refer a lot of our patients to him that require urological care, and he in turn is very happy that the patients are getting nutritional advice from us.
That's wonderful. Yeah,
it's the way it should be, but you know, unfortunately
that's the way it should be.
We have all too few relationships with conventional practitioners like that, but I think that's a model for the kind of cooperation that the integrative community should have with the conventional community.
Mm-hmm.
It should be, you know, mutual respect and, exchange.
Absolutely. Hopefully we will see that to come, or more of it to come.
That's right. It's like it's like Martin Luther King, I had a dream. it's like I had a dream. So someday we will actually see that. Hopefully we will live to see that day. Well, we're seeing it more and more. I don't want to minimize it.
More and more.
We're seeing it more and more.
It's definitely different than it was 10 years ago, even so.
Absolutely.
I'm very hopeful.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. So I think that's all the time that we have for questions. So those of you who have additional questions, please send them to radioprogram@AOL.com. We'll endeavor to answer as many as we can on next week's edition of Q&A with Layla. So have a great week. And please listen to all the rest of our podcasts, because we got some great interviews. And, of course, listen to our weekend program, broadcast from noon to 2 p.m. on Saturdays. And you can listen live at drhoffman.com. And, in addition, like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and you'll get the best of all the dispatches from the nutritional front that I post there and share with listeners. So that's the story, and I'm sticking to it. Okay. All right. I'll see you in the office.
Very good.
Thanks.
Okay.
Thanks for joining us, Layla. Take care now.
Thank you.